First, shortly after Election Day, when it became clear that Joe Biden was in position to win the presidency, conservatives were fearful the country would take a sharp left turn and undo the policies of President Trump. Among the big concerns were things like the Green New Deal, packing the U.S. Supreme Court, statehood for Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia, and others. But our guest conservative columnist wrote in a recent piece, "Chin up, the next 4 years might actually turn out to be much more moderate. That depends in part on the Georgia Senate runoff elections." You can join in at 800-642-1234. What would you want to see from a Biden administration? Are you hoping the U.S. racks up a bunch of progressive changes or doesn't change so much under a Democratic president? If a Senate remains in Republican control, how should they approach the new president? What issue are you most concerned about? COVID, the economy, healthcare, climate change, something else? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Brad Slager writes about politics and the business side of the Hollywood industry at places like Red State, Hot Air, Twitchy, The Federalist, and elsewhere. He co-hosts the podcast The Culture Shift and Disasters in the Making. He wrote about the incoming Biden presidency at Town Hall. Brad, thanks a lot for joining us today.
No, I appreciate it, Rob. Thank you for the time.
Well, I don't like to put words in anybody's mouth, but I think it's fair to say you're not necessarily excited about the prospect of a Biden presidency. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, given that I write at conservative outlets, it's not a big mystery. I was not a big fan of Biden, but I mean, at the same time, I think it's manageable. And once we ever do get resolution to this whole voting thing, then we know where we stand. Right now, there's a little bit too much flux going on, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a big question here is, of course, what happens in the Senate? You wrote the piece kind of framed around the idea of a Biden presidency, but Republicans keeping control of the Senate. And in that, what seems like pretty substantially likely outcome, what is your message to fellow conservatives about what the next 4 years might look like?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of an overemphasis on the solitary office. I mean, of course, the presidency is important and drives much of the country. But at the same time, you know, when you've got checks and balances in place, which we do have, because even though Biden won the presidency, this was actually a very good election for the GOP. I know a lot of people in the media and such wanted to try to call it a death knell for the Republicans, except, you know, they made some gains in the House. They did pretty well in state houses as well. And as long as they retain the Senate, then I think we have true checks and balances going on. So it's not a big panic button moment.
Oh, I mean, I think a lot of the media has been pointing out the big and I think unexpected by Democrats failure to gain seats, not only fail to gain seats, but lose seats in the House. Definitely a split decision I think we have here.
Yeah. And I'm down here in South Florida. It was really kind of a shockwave felt by the Democrats, because down in Dade County, the Latin American vote was very heavily in favor of Trump over 2016. He made significant gains there. We took a couple House seats in South Florida for DC. And, you know, overall, I think the GOP showed some strength. And it really is a bit of an anomaly to see a Democrat get elected with such a strong GOP presence everywhere else.
So I listed a few of the things you pointed out in your piece, potential Democratic policy items, especially supported by, I guess, the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party that Republicans and conservatives are particularly worried about. What stands out to you as the top worry of conservatives under a Biden presidency?
I think court packing probably was the biggest one. You know, that's something that was brought up repeatedly during debates. Biden always tried to avoid a strong answer, which pretty much indicated what his intentions would be there. So I think it's pretty significant to maintain the Senate in GOP hands, let Mitch McConnell still run that judiciary so that he can work at preventing that sort of massive renovation of the Supreme Court. And then, you know, apart from that, the Green New Deal, of course, is something that everybody's kind of focused on. But I'm not as worried about that, because that's going to have to go through a lengthy process in the House. And when you have enough GOP seats that were picked up this time, it's not going to pass through very cleanly, if at all. So don't think that's as much of a concern. I think the courts, and maybe to a lesser extent, the statehood for Puerto Rico and D.C. has always been tabled as a possibility as well.
Talking to conservative columnist Brad Slager, he wrote a piece soon after the election at Town Hall saying, conservatives don't worry so much about a Biden presidency, especially if Republicans keep control of the U.S. Senate. Still an open question at this point. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you want to see from a Biden presidency? What do you fear to see from a Biden presidency? How do you think Biden and a likely Republican Senate, though, again, asterisk there, should work together? Or do you not want to see them work together? 800-642-1234. Brad, obviously a lot of people who voted for Republicans or Democrats here want their side to hunker down and not so much compromise or cooperate with the other party. What do you think of the notion, though, that this idea that we have likely, we for sure have divided government given Democratic control of the House, probably Republican control of the Senate, that people want to see both sides not hunker down and actually try to meet halfway, at least on some significant issues like COVID and the economy and things like that?
Yeah, I think that's kind of more of a realistic. I think, you know, once, let's just, you know, say Biden is the president, the main focus is going to be on COVID response, see what's going to happen there. That's going to be kind of where the thrust of things are. And we've already seen problems with that. I mean, the last couple relief bills that have come through both the House and the Senate, they haven't really been able to agree on that too well. Beyond COVID, though, frankly, if there's any kind of loggerheads going on in D.C., somebody like myself, I don't see that necessarily as bad news. If you could slow down government, I'm not going to complain too much about it. So outside of the necessary stuff, COVID response, budgetary issues, I don't have a problem with roadblocks going up one way or the other, really.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi. You know, I felt hopeful when you said that a Republican was not feeling so afraid of Joe Biden being president, especially given that he's pretty much a moderate centrist, as far as it seems to me. Republicans don't seem to be ever debating in a logical and genuine way, and I was hoping that's what your guest was going to be bringing back. But it sounds like more what he wants to do is just maintain a Republican control of the Senate so he can block everything Democrats want to do. And that does not seem like finding the middle ground to me. That does not seem like debating with genuineness and a clear conscience.
John, thanks for the call. First of all, to John's first point, Brad, he's saying Biden is more of a moderate Democrat, and certainly compared to a lot of the Democratic primary field, he was not the first choice of a lot of the left and progressive wing of the party.
Well, I'd hedge on that only because I did watch the Democrat debates, and when there was a full field, Joe Biden was definitely moving further and further left to appeal to, you know, the Bernie Sanders voters and such. And he was making some, you know, pretty wild proposals as far as left-wing politics go. And even, you know, Kamala Harris, the vice president, remember we saw an interview with her where she was proclaiming she wanted to bring an end to things like personal health care insurance and things of this nature. So, yeah, I mean, to say Biden is a centrist is a little stretch. I'll say maybe most centrist of the Democrat field. But yeah, he was definitely out on the left wing during the debates.
And then John raising concerns about what he was pointing to as maybe Republican obstructionism under a Biden presidency. But it sounds like for what you were saying earlier, you're okay with a little obstruction.
Yeah, it's not an automatic no as well. It's just more a matter, you know, if Joe Biden's going to table some of those left wing policies, obviously a GOP Senate is not going to play along necessarily either. So, you know, I think it's on a case-by-case basis when you look at these things. And when it comes to things like court packing and, you know, his energy issue, which he, you know, at one point wanted to say it wasn't part of the Green New Deal, but on his own election website said the Green New Deal is the framework of his energy policy. He was at the debate saying he wanted to end fracking outright and things of this nature. So, yeah, there are some rather left-wing policies he's forwarded, and I'm pretty sure those are going to meet opposition in the GOP Senate.
Thanks for the call at 800-642-1234. We're looking at what a Biden presidency could look like with a potentially likely Republican Senate. Brad Slager is with us. He writes about politics and the business side of Hollywood at Red State, The Federalist, and elsewhere. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you hope to see from the Biden administration over the next 4 years? What do you worry about from it? What issues do you want to see focused on? What do you want to see the relationship between the president and Congress look like in the next 4 years? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're talking about what an incoming President Biden administration might look like with Brad Slager. He writes about politics and the business side of Hollywood at Red State, Hot Air, The Federalist, and elsewhere. He co-hosts the podcast, The Culture Shift and Disasters in the Making. Brad wrote a piece at Town Hall soon after the election saying a Biden presidency wouldn't be the disaster that a lot of conservatives are worried about, especially if Republicans keep control of the Senate. Still have to look to the Georgia runoff elections in January. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. What are your hopes or worries over a new administration? What do you want to see from the Senate and Senate Republicans if they end up keeping control? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's go back to your calls now. Lisa is with us in Madison. Lisa, hi.
Hi. In regard to court packing, aside from the fact that at different points in our history, we did have more than 9 judges on the court, I would contend that Mitch McConnell is engaging in court packing in regard to the federal courts, even ignoring hundreds of bills, legislation on his desk to fill the courts. So that really is court packing as well.
Lisa, thanks for the call. I've seen people refer to it more as court stacking, I guess. Brad, packing usually implies increasing the number of judges on a Supreme Court or elsewhere. But people pointing toward running out the clock on Merrick Garland and things like that is part of an ongoing escalation here that's led to at least some calls for court packing. What do you make of that back and forth?
No, I'd agree with your assessment there. It's not so much packing as much as it is, filling seats with party friendly incumbents. So whoever is in charge is going to be making those moves. And McConnell has been, hitting the throttle as far as judge appointments go from pretty much day one. But as far as stack, when you get to packing the Supreme Court, that's a completely different animal because you're actually renovating the Supreme Court from where it's been in place, I think, since the 1800s, let's say. So that's definitely an alteration of the norm.
I've seen, thanks for that call, Lisa. I've seen arguments, Brad, from across the political spectrum that say, hey, you know what? We've given too much power to the Supreme Court in some ways. That's raised the stakes here and made it such a big issue. I don't know. What do you think? Is it worth reevaluating how much say the court system has over things passed by Congress and the president?
Well, it's always been a case. I mean, both parties could make that call too, because there's a lot of issues over the years where you could talk about legislating from the bench and having new policy being read into the Constitution that's not necessarily there. And that's where appointments come into play the most. Who you put in, how much fidelity they have to the Constitution, things of that nature. But that's all party specific as well. That's when they say elections have consequences. If a party's in power and they get to seat on the court, they're going to do that. I mean, I know there's been a lot of consternation about some of the recent appointments, but they've all been in line with the Constitution. Even the Merrick Garland situation was one where it wasn't the first time. Anytime you've seen two different parties in the White House and the Senate, there has been those contretemps when it came to appointments. It hasn't been an automatic push through. So, it's not commonplace, but it's also never unheard of. It was pretty specific as far as who was in charge.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to conservative columnist Brad Slager, looking at the prospects for a Biden presidency, possibly Republican control of the Senate continuing. And he wrote a piece lately saying, if that is the outcome, fellow conservatives, things might not be so bad in that scenario. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. We've got Debbie with us in Maquonago. Debbie, hi. Are you there, Debbie? No, I don't think we have Debbie. Let's try Tom in Madison. Tom, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First of all, it would be very nice to have a stable, non-narcissistic person in the White House. And I'm hoping that might inspire Republicans to actually do things with a backup plan. I'm somebody who gets their health insurance from the ACA. I'm a sole proprietor business. And I'm very nervous about this repeal without having any replacement. And I see the same thing happening across the board coming out of the Paris Accords without a backup plan, backing out of START, the INF, the Iran deal, without any kind of backup plan. It'll be nice to get back to a responsible Republican Party if possible.
Tom, thanks for the call. Brad, what do you think?
Well, you know, I hear that quite frequently. I do believe there's a bit of an overemphasis on the personality of Donald Trump, too. I mean, whenever I'm looking at a presidency during an election, I'm not picking based on personality. It's who's going to end up delivering party policy that agrees with my views. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not any person in a love affair with Donald Trump, so he's, you know, managed to put people in place that agree with my philosophy. So that's where my support lies. I mean, as far as alternative plans, I think on a case-by-case basis, it's a little bit different. I mean, as far as the healthcare insurance goes, yeah, we'd all love to see the perfect implementation of a plan replacement. And I think they did have one in play. It was just a matter of getting through some of the offices and getting a plan drawn up. As far as the Paris Accord goes, I don't see the problem there where we pulled out and our greenhouse emissions have actually dropped since that occurred. So there's not really any kind of detrimental effect to that taking place outside of saving us trillions of dollars in responsibility that wouldn't have any other effect that we already saw. But yeah, it's, you know, you always want to see a perfect replacement if that's at all possible. I don't argue that point too vehemently, but it's, yeah, I would say don't focus so much on the individual as much as on what can the party do as a whole.
Thanks for that call. Same with the Affordable Care Act. I mean, you mentioned the effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act ended up falling short under Republican control of both chambers and the White House. Oh, we've got the Supreme Court case. Who knows what's going to happen there? But even supporters of the Affordable Care Act say, you know, this thing isn't perfect. It needs some tweaks. Do you think after all the years of back and forth on that, there's an opportunity here to adjust the Affordable Care Act as it stands now?
I'd say it's possible, but it's really that'll determine more what we see following the finalization of these elections. You know, once we get everybody in place in the chairs and they can start hammering things out, you know, it's there's one dividing difference, and that's mostly that conservatives want to do away with ACA because they just saw all the deleterious effects that it had once it was implemented. And I understand people on the left want it for their reasoning as well. So this is one of those issues that needs middle ground, that needs to be hammered out on both sides. It was pretty much forced into place by one party. It has been rolled back to a certain degree by the other party. So there has not been that agreement yet that I've seen from both parties on this particular issue.
Let's bring on, I think we have time for one more caller, maybe two, but Tyler is with us in Green Bay. Tyler, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Tyler?
I wanted to talk about how I think we have this idea that our country is very divided in a lot of ways and how close a lot of these elections are, not just at national levels, but local levels, too, that I think we have a lot more in common than we think, and that this would be a good time, especially if we have a divided government, to work on compromise and work on things that people agree with and move forward, as opposed to focusing on partisan dividing and trying to, you know, me against you kind of politics.
Tyler, thanks for the call. We touched on that a little earlier. Brad, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I think the divisiveness in the nation is a bit overhyped for two reasons. One is the media. The second is social media. You know, just whenever there's any kind of conflict on one of those platforms, it just gets magnified beyond its reality. So you know, you could go on social media and get into 17 arguments inside of an hour, and then you can walk out on the street and have a conversation with people, and it's actually civil. And you see some real conversation take place there. So I think that's the main difference we're looking at. Yeah, with the elections being as close as they are, that's indicative of it. We're not, you know, it's not as cut and dry as everybody wants to say it is. The Democrats are now in control. The GOP is dead. Nah, not really, because there were gains on both sides and nobody really came out far ahead this election. So yeah, there is, I think, room for negotiation and a need for it, quite frankly, in a lot of issues.
Tyler, thanks for that call. Just in our last few moments, Brad, what are you watching for in Georgia now with the Senate races? I won't ask anybody to predict an outcome, but what do you have your eye on there?
It's really a tough call because it keeps evolving. You know, I've seen in the media, they keep wanting to insist there's no shenanigans taking place. There's no voter fraud taking place, even though story after story keeps percolating up and, you know, they're finding batches of votes here. There's this mistake taking place in a precinct. So predicting it is a complete toss up right now because the evidence keeps changing on almost daily basis. So the runoffs are going to be something everybody watches. I'm almost kind of leaning at it being a split, one for each party. I just, you know, I don't think Ossoff really has the experience and everything needed to win a seat. But, you know, again, this judging that state has been impossible for the last 3 weeks.
So yeah, I'm not going to bet money either way. Brad, thanks a lot for joining us.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks, Rob.
That's Brad Slager. He writes about politics and the business side of the Hollywood industry at Red State and elsewhere. He co-hosts the podcast, The Culture Shift and Disasters in the Making. Talk to him about a piece he wrote at the website Town Hall about what an incoming Biden presidency could look like, assuming Republicans hang on to control of the Senate.